We are living in a time of reckoning. So much reckoning. Because a lot of the issues we are confronting or confronted with have been in a delayed maintenance loop, delayed ethical and spiritual maintenance. Society has put it off for a long time, and as with all delayed maintenance, as any church leader knows, it mounts up. And when something finally gives, such that it all has to be recognized and dealt with, it's a lot, and it's expensive. And it's not optional. We just have to do it and pay the cost and content ourselves that it is finally getting done, and we will be in much better shape going forward. Yes, David House?
Yeah.
One of the issues that has been on delayed maintenance is gender and harassment. And it is not that we didn't know about it. We totally did. We all heard about the casting couch. The idea that usually female stars might expect to pay for their success indulging the wants of studio heads or Broadway producers. And we knew that women could experience harassment or even violence in any walk of life. We knew about more forms of all this than I have time to list now if I want to say anything else about it. It's in the Bible. It's in both the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament. Even Jesus was not always respectful to women. I was a little shocked by how he talked to the woman at the well. It has been part of worldwide human society for thousands of years, including religion found everywhere in mythology and in all scriptures. And for so long, it was at worst endorsed and at best ignored. Until now. For many people in the room, this topic is personal. And for some, it is beyond personal. It is traumatic. For some, this topic is fraught and takes us to a place of tension and reactivity, even anguish. So before I say anything else, I want to call back to the spirit of Ubuntu. That Zulu and Bantu word that we focused on a couple weeks ago, remember, it means I am who I am because of who we all are. Can we say that together? I am who I am because of who we all are together. This is one of those topics that absolutely reminds us that Ubuntu isn't a principle, it is a truth. I really am who I am. Because of who we all are. And this is so for every one of us. With a topic so fraught, I have to say I do not want to hurt anyone in any way with what I say this morning, which doesn't mean I won't. If I do, in any way, I ask you to trust me enough to let me know. I also ask you in advance to forgive me. Tough things are risky. But tough and risky things are also the stuff of religion and a faithful community. And we have to be able to do this, to talk about this quality of thing together and learn together and forgive together and grow together to grow in trust. And to grow in understanding, and to grow in strength. How we treat and understand each other across gender identities is an ancient issue that we are developing entirely new answers to, because the ethics of gender are always evolving, and right now they're not just evolving, they are turning upside down, hard and fast, and changing in ways that we honor here in this beloved community, and still changing at a rate that we don't always keep up with, even though we mean to, even though we try. We are learning to do better, and we need to learn to do better, though it is tough and sometimes risky. We all know that this wave of change has come from the Me Too movement. Me Too has a lot of layers and power and challenge to it. In less than 3 years, it has upended dynasties, moguls, corporations, and superstars. It has raised awareness and ethical standards in every walk of life. It has championed victims, supporting them in struggles to name and heal, suffering with them when aggressors have triumphed. Me Too tends to focus on male behavior towards women, but it includes same-sex aggressions and female-on-male aggressions and aggressions involving trans and gender non-binary people. I don't in any way mean to suggest that only one of these dynamics matters or has been important in the life of this beloved community. But I do want to acknowledge that the majority of issues arise from men's behavior towards women. And I remember when I first learned this, which was long before Me Too. It was over 20 years ago, and I was at a gathering of Unitarian Universalist ministers, a study group I attend every spring and fall to this day. And the topic was something about sex or sexuality, which is so much racier than anything we usually do. And I honestly don't remember more about the details of our topic, but it was a clergy gathering, so it was a very unsexy consideration of sex. Regardless, at some point in the meeting, we split into two groups. We never do this. It's the only time we ever did it. We split into two groups. We were gender binary at the time, women in one group, men in the other. We gathered to talk about sex in our separate groups and separate spaces. And during the women's conversation, we discovered that in that high-powered, well-educated group of women faith leaders, back then we were also all white, every single one of us had been physically violated in some way once or more in our lives. At the time, I was astonished. But since then, I have learned that that is pretty much par for the course. Regardless of setting and regardless of supposed privilege, and with only a couple of exceptions in all the years since, every woman or group of women I have talked to about this has had that experience. At the very least, of clearly unwanted intimate touch. Almost no American woman I know has escaped unscathed, untouched, unviolated. And here's the other thing. Almost none of us did anything about those violations except try to escape them. That's all I did. That's all I did many years ago when a young man behind me on a jam-packed bus in Athens put his hand where it had no business being, and I looked at him, shocked, and he didn't even look back at me. But there was no way it was a mistake, and I could have yelled, I should have yelled. People on that bus would have rallied instantly to help me and physically, perhaps violently, muscle him off that bus immediately. I have zero doubt. But I didn't even think of it. I just tried to get away. And he just pursued me, silently, never looking at me, always with the hand. And I got off the bus at the next stop with no idea where I was. And he stayed on the bus with no disruption to his day. Why didn't I yell? So many layers. Because I was not just shocked and angry, but I was also ashamed. And because I had internalized some of the objectification that societies heap on all women everywhere in the world, telling us that this is part of our role and part of our identity. We are to be objectified, to be judged, admired, condemned, to have our worth expressed in terms of diamonds and gold, to be chased through endless hallways and endless houses in endless movies as a form of entertainment. to be assaulted or to be killed, to be prey and preyed upon. Think about it, especially for entertainment. We even ourselves go to movies and watch ourselves preyed upon and objectified. In ways, incidentally, think about it, that would be ridiculous if it was just a man in that situation, fleeing down the hallway, desperately trying to find some inadequate object with which to vainly ward off whatever the attack is. A man alone in the house is going to do something, investigate, steal, dance. A woman alone in a house is going to be hurt. Society has taught women we are prizes or we are prey, and taught men that this is all right. And all of us, to some degree, have been influenced by this. For so long, that bus ride was my worst story of violation until last year, when the best-selling religious scholar and MacArthur fellow Elaine Pagels published her memoir, Why Religion? And like me, she studied at Harvard Divinity School, and like me, she did doctoral-level work with the renowned early church historian, the Reverend Dr. Helmut Kuster, who was a lion. He was a lion in his field. And like me, she was sexually harassed by him, a thing I had forgotten until I read her account. How could I possibly have forgotten such a thing? I think in part because I had no way to handle it when it happened, and it only happened once. It only happened once. We were on a walk, on an archaeology trip in Greece and Turkey, standing on a bridge and stopping to turn around and walk back because it was getting dark, and he stepped forward and he put his hand on my chest. And I couldn't believe it. I must have just gawked at him. I was that astonished. And I don't remember if I stepped back or if he did. I don't remember if I said something. I don't think he did. I know we walked back and we never spoke of it again. It was the very first semester I had studied with him. And it wasn't the last. Layers. Helmut was one of my favorite professors. He was brilliant, an expert in the same history and archaeology that I was fascinated by, and I took many more classes from him, and I did well in them, and I asked him to be my advisor. And I got work-study grants helping to edit an ongoing series and also his book, Philippi, at the time of Paul and after his death, and he thanks me in the foreword for my help. I was alone in his office with him countless times, without discomfort or fear. He never touched me or did anything inappropriate to me ever again. When an error in my registration 1 year threatened, deeply threatened, my degree and my tenuous finances, Helmut took me with him to consult the department chair and the registrar, and within an hour, strings had been pulled and I was saved, truly. I went from screwed to saved in an hour because of what he did for me. And the details are boring and administrative, but drastic, and he asked nothing in return. And until last year, those are all and only the ways I remembered him. His brilliance, his mentorship, his compassion, his championing my scholarship. How could I have forgotten that moment on the bridge? How could I have simply walked back with him in that awkward twilight, in silence or in conversation? I don't remember. And what do I do with it now, this mentor who violated that sacred trust between student and teacher and also taught me more and helped me more than any other teacher in all my learning? When I learn only now, he had the nickname Kester the Molester. It hurts to say that awful nickname aloud to you. Get this, it hurts because it demeans him. and I feel he deserved better. Which is not true, because what Elaine Pagel says he did to her, what she recounts in that book, was so much worse than anything he did to me, and I know it because I read her book, and she published it 2 years after his death. Layers. I am sharing my Me Too truths with you because I know there are so many people in this space. There have to be. So many people in this space and everywhere beyond it with similar stories, layered, which they may or may not ever tell. And I'm telling them because we have to be able to share those stories, to help each other understand more of the realities we live with, including that we have all been seen for what we are rather than who we are. The categories, the objectifications, so objectionable, finally now intolerable. This is the interpersonal challenge of our times, this paradox that we must honor the realities of race and gender and class and heritage, all these identities that are part of who we each are, and at the same time, we must see each other as people, as persons, for the unique souls that we are, so much more than merely some composite of categories. For this interpersonal challenge, we are well suited. We already affirm and uphold the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. We have no other goal here than to do exactly that. To be together in community in ways that support and grow ourselves and each other, basically to love on each other with respect and humility and generosity, and to support and grow goodness in the world, to love on the world with respect and humility and generosity. So we have our own reckoning to do here. As we embrace society's larger delayed maintenance, we have to know there are implications for us right here in our beloved community from the land of before. There have been times here when people treated one another badly or disrespectfully, and some of it has involved gender. We have to name this. It has happened between congregants. It also happened once in the mid-20th century when a minister, Brooks Walker, sexually misconducted himself with female congregants here. He knew he was doing wrong. Rarely a congregant who has offended another has known they were using language or approaches that were unwelcome. In most instances, it has been unintentional, a compliment or an inquiry that was innocent and a little clumsy in a way that would horrify the instigator if they knew how their comment or gesture was received by another. Of those incidents I know, a few happened a long time ago, and some were more recent. Most involve women made uncomfortable by men. But I've spoken to at least one male member here who has been made uncomfortable by women. So there is not only one direction or shape for any of this. Now you're really not going to touch my hands. We cannot be perfect. We can't be perfect, but we can be better. In fact, we have to be better. We need to talk about it, clear the air, clarify expectations and hurt, and apology and ways forward. All of this will take some nerve to speak, to have a conversation with someone we may not even know well, likely someone we don't know well, but maybe someone we do know well, and hear something about ourselves we weren't expecting so we can commit to do better. Tough, risky, faithful. The solution is not, obviously, to stop speaking to one another. It's to speak honestly and respectfully, including when we are letting someone know we're uncomfortable or unhappy with something they said. Let's be completely honest. That exchange will be awkward and we will not want to do it. But most of them will end in a much better place, in a better understanding, in not even just that, a better relationship, because we have spoken an important truth with one another, and we have expressed our commitment to support and not to hurt, and not to objectify each other, not by accident and certainly not by intent. We have a right relations policy in this church to help us manage escalating conflicts or willful hurt. If you are ever confronted by such a situation, please tell me, tell Roger, let this church help you address it for your safety and your healing. But many of the issues that come up in a community this size are smaller, unintentional, and still hurtful. And this is part of what we're here for, to learn to do better by each other, to help build the world and ways to believe in by practicing it all here with each other, where we know we all share a commitment to one world we believe in and to the ways that support it, to the courage and honesty they require, to the forgiveness and deepening that they promise. These are not just lofty phrases. They're really, for us, homely realities and challenges. We don't want to be a community so afraid of getting something wrong that we hardly speak to each other. We need to learn and practice, expecting, as they say, not perfection, but progress. If we see a woman looking serious or sad here, don't tell her to smile. Tell her we notice her expression. Ask her if she is okay. If we see a man looking handsome in his outfit, don't say, "Hey, handsome, looking good." Unless we know them very well, we're 100% confident they won't take it the wrong way, still could be wrong. If we touch someone to greet them or express concern or draw their attention and they seem uncomfortable with our touch, check in and ask them if it was okay or not. And if they say it wasn't, for any reason or no reason at all, don't touch them. Don't touch them without their permission. Even something as ordinary as a handshake or a clap on the shoulder carries different weight for people in this congregation. Believe me, I have heard it from them directly. It doesn't mean we can't any of us shake hands when this virus is over and done with, or clap each other on the shoulder, or hug. It means we have to pay more attention to all of this, to look more carefully and check in more carefully. And all of this is a two-way street. If we are unhappy or uncomfortable, we need to find a way to say so, a way that invites someone into a conversation about it. You know, I'm not comfortable with what you just said. Or I'm not comfortable with how you just touched me. Please, women, don't start with "I'm sorry." "I'm sorry, but I'm not comfortable with what you," don't do that. If touch is difficult for us, we need to find a way to let people know and invite them into a different form of greeting they can learn over time so that we can all interact together in ways we're comfortable. Again, if it's a bigger deal than that one conversation, talk to Roger, talk to me, let us help. Revelation is ongoing. That foundational theological principle of Unitarian Universalism has so many applications. But we don't expect to magically just get it, whatever the it is. We expect, that's what the theology says. We are always going to learn more and need to stay open to that. This is a community with strong bonds and lots of care and lots of capacity, and we have learned and grown for centuries. We are committed to being on this unfolding journey together through discovery and development and sharing and spiritual connection. That journey requires the ability to share our truths because we care about each other's truths. And that is when we change and are changed in honoring each other's truths. James Baldwin, that so great 20th century African-American writer and activist, he said, "Love takes off the masks. Love takes off the masks that we fear we cannot live without. and know we cannot live within. I use the word love here not merely in the personal sense, but as a state of being or a state of grace, not in the infantile American sense of being made happy, but in the tough and universal quest and daring and growth. This is not about political correctness or silencing or undermining. It can't be about any of that. It's not about being correct. It's about caring. It's not about being constrained. It's about being responsible. It has to be about powerful human relationship, perceiving and celebrating the personhood and value of all of us here with greater awareness and intention. Ubuntu. I am who I am because of who we all are. Thinking more, noticing more than we have in the land of before. Learning new things, building a new way. A new way. Real freedom, real equality, together. Amen.